This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. It's 3 p.m.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I am your host, Milton Alamadi. Today's guest is a very courageous Ugandan woman, Lina Zedriga. She's joining us from Uganda. She is a human rights activist, a feminist, a mentor to young Ugandans, to the youth. She's an expert on human rights law, and she's the vice president of the National Unity Platform, better known as NUP, in Uganda. This is the party whose president is Bobi Wine, and this is the party that is the presumed winner of the January presidential elections in Uganda, an election which is in the process of being hijacked and rigged by the country's dictator of 35 years, the U.S.-backed general, Yoweri Museveni. Welcome to Black Star News Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you and greetings to all of you who are listening, the comrades, those who are hurting, those who are with us still in the struggle, all the Ugandans and also our allies globally. I salute you all, and I want to dedicate this in a special way to those, the prisoners of conscience, the Nubian Leaves.
Yes, Nubian Leaves. That is one of Bobi Wine's close colleagues and a member of NUP. So before we get started into what is going on in Uganda, I wanted to start off by asking you a general question. Mm-hmm. Regarding the role of women in public affairs and politics in Africa generally, okay, and then in Uganda specifically, why don't you talk about that? We've had only a handful of women emerge as top leaders or even presidents in African countries. As we speak, I know President Samia Hassan is now president of Tanzania, having taken over the helm after the recent death of President John Magufuli. And then I know, of course, in Ethiopia, we have Saleh Zude, even though she's not executive president. So President Hassan is the only executive woman president in Africa. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes.
So why don't you address this issue in general? Because by holding back so much talent, does this not hold back Africa's potential and where Africa could be today if women were playing a much larger role, a role worthy of their numbers and their talents in Africa? Talk about that issue.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. The role women play in politics, in administration, in the public space is very enormous, very enormous. However, the limitation is constructed of women in African communities. Yes, in African communities, the practices, the socialization of women or girls is for reproduction. For domesticity, for, you know, being at home, nurturing, reproduction, unpaid, undervalued. The socialization for the male or the boy child or the man is for public power, pay, okay? Valued, okay? So we miss out a lot because much as a number of the countries, even the African Union has the gender policy, that is to address these disparities, these discriminatory practices, in customary practices, entrenched even in legal and institutional spaces, much as there's the affirmative action in practice, actually, we are still struggling to liberate, really liberate and value women for those places, including taking up offices in the presidency. And if I may refer to Malawi, the former president of Malawi, Her Excellency Joyce Banda, she also took off office after the death of the husband, you know? So Correct. This one also has taken over after the death. It is still a big struggle for communities and for citizens, for Africa to appreciate and vote women presidents by right. So what we now need to do very aggressively is to ensure that we profile these women, we celebrate them fine, but we also dismantle the continued practices of undervaluing women, of socializing women only, and looking at women as less capable of high offices. We have reports, we have done researches. We are left now to ensure that in practice, generationally, we make that our agenda and we advocate for it.
And what about the education process? Is this not also very important in playing a constructive role? And what is being done about that? Let's talk about Uganda specifically. And then let's talk about your role after that.
Thank you so much. The education. These are constructions that have taken place for a long time and practices, by the way, of viewing women as less capable in public spaces. Mm. One of our, in fact, during the socialization and education, primary three, primary four, in syllabus, there is a lesson that portrays women as not capable of being heads of families, okay? and children. And our new situation, our reality during the armed conflicts, children have actually ably headed families. But in our civic books, there is a question, who is the head of the family? My own son struggled with it because he hadn't seen a father figure. So then because of it, then he's made to look as less human, you see? So those are things that we are struggling with and we must dismantle them very systematically, not just as an event with education. We need to reconstruct and redo the narrative of posturing women as very capable and leaders at all levels, presidency inclusive. I also would like to very briefly refer to how socialization is making communities and voters struggle with having a woman, even as chairpersons. For a long time, we had only one in Kanungu. Now, in the last elections, I think now we have three or four. One in Kapchorwa. And so, chairperson, district chairpersons, we are still struggling at that level to have women accepted to run, to have women portrayed as capable leaders. So it is a socialization and a mindset thing. We need to deconstruct it very systemically. And it may not happen in my generation, but my daughter's generations. And we need to ensure that these conversations are going on and also in action.
Okay, and obviously it's very clear that this is not just a problem in Africa. No. Or in Uganda. I mean, we have never had a president of the United States that is a woman, for example, right?
Absolutely.
It's a global issue.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Now, you obviously, by being the vice president of National Unity Platform, you have a very visible position. And I must say, I mean, I've followed some of your activism for quite some time now. And I must tell you, I'm very impressed with your courage in confronting this essentially a military regime in Uganda. Tell us where you get this fire from before we even go into the details of what is going on in Uganda today. Where does this fire come from?
Lena Zabuda. Thank you so much. I was born, raised in West Nile or Levuarua, and my family, my mother Magdalene and my father Carlo Abuku, both of them were very, they were disciplinarians in a way that they inculcated in me the need to be focused, the need to be vicious, the need to go to school and excel. I get the courage from that education. I also get the courage from the fact that by primary five, I was the only, we were two girls left in a class of 70 plus pupils. And by primary seven, I was the only girl. So I knew whatever I do, I must excel. And I did excel from primary. I was the best, not only in my school, in Awali, a village school, by the way, where I was walking bare feet to that school 2 kilometers away. I was the best in Vora. Yes, I put on my first shoes when I went to Sacred Heart S1 in 1975.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm listening to you, and I'll tell you why I'm laughing.
Please tell me.
Let me tell you, because many years ago, as a young boy, when I also went to primary school in Uganda, I think it was primary 2 or 3. And the top student in my class was a girl.
You see?
And she was just brilliant in math. Uh-huh. And I came second once. And then all the boys were rooting for me. And the boys were saying, how could you let this girl defeat us? So I became representative for all the boys. And then you know what? The second term, she defeated me again. I came in second.
Oh!
So as you're describing this, I'm laughing because I'm now remembering some of the pressures that must have also been on that young girl who must have worked very hard to be first, because even the teachers used to favor the boys in the class.
So I get the fire from that socialization and also my faith as a Catholic. I'm a practicing Catholic, and my mother also used to tell me, Lena, you must excel. Lena, you must really make sure that you, I have not studied, so you study for me and become a lawyer, okay? Be a globetrotter for me. So whatever I'm doing was inculcated in my mother and my father believing that really I was their eye. Yes. And also I'm the third born and the only girl. And also now the only surviving member of the family, because my two brothers passed on.
May they rest in peace.
Yeah, David, yeah. So that is, then too, the cultural practice was that much as I was the youngest girl, the youngest person in the family, of course, it was an extended family with my mother's, with my aunties and my father's, sisters, all staying in that home. I would always come from school and they would tell, I would be told, go to fetch firewood, go to fetch water, come and cook. When my two brothers who are older than me would be free to go and play football.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I know the practice.
Yes. Right,
now, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Radio, also streaming on WBI.org. And I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Our guest today is Linda Zedriga, joining us from Uganda. Listeners, as you know, WBAI is 100% listener supported. We do not take commercials. And that is how we are able to bring you these types of conversations. But I just need to remind you, we do this through your support. So please do pick up the phone and dial 212-290-2950. Any contribution will be put to good use to bringing you shows such as the one you're now listening to. You can also adopt Black Star News Show as a buddy, in which case the money is taken every month from your credit or debit card. You can do so by going to give, and then the number to WBAI.org. Now back to our guest, Lena Zedriga. So now I'd like to turn to the situation in Uganda.
Yes.
I want to also alert readers who may have missed this article in the New York Times. I urge that you read this article published April 11th. And the headline is, Tell Us If He's Dead. Abductions and Torture Rattle Uganda. And this article, of course, details the ongoing campaign of terror by General Yoweri Museveni's regime, kidnapping people, including young Ugandans, torturing, and some cases killing. Bodies are being discovered, or they're either released with harrowing tales of how they were tortured by the regime's secret police. And obviously, this comes after the election of January 14, which is widely reported as having been rigged. So I want you to talk about this because you yourself, yeah, you've been arrested. So you know some of the details of what goes on after people have been abducted in Uganda. But perhaps before you get into this, you could contextualize it by telling us what was happening even before the elections of January 14. Please, the floor is yours, Lena Zadru.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You will forgive me if at some point I get emotional because I'll try to be level-headed.
We totally understand.
I was unveiled as the vice president on the 8th of April.
National Unity Platform.
Yes, by then, People power, of course. National Unity Platform came later, you know, in October. Yes. Okay. And so, anyway, after my unveiling and then also other vice deputy president later on joined, of course, people power grew. People power really grew very, very fast. And it has a lot of support from the young people. And frenzy around, you know, participating and with power. So I would like to fast forward to 3rd of November. That was our presidential nomination day. I'll be going back and forth. That day, I remember very vividly, we were in Magere by 8 and very smart. And we started being delayed. We saw militarization of the whole compound of our presidential candidate. There were delays on the way. We started with experiencing tear gas. We started experiencing live bullets on the road. People had lined massively. And by the time we reached Kisasi, there was all the roadblocks and the military was just too much. And people thought we would not even get to Kiambogo successfully. Thank God. We reached halfway. We almost ran out of our vehicles because by the time we reached Ntinda, the principal's vehicle, a police officer, a military officer, was seen deflating it. My goodness. So
deflating the tires?
Yes.
Okay. Please continue.
Yes. So, anyway, when we reached Spear Motors, we were blocked and it was bad. We were running so late. We still reached Kiambogo and we got nominated. And after the nomination, lo and behold, hell broke loose right at the gate of Kiambogo, the venue where the nominations were taking place. We experienced a very heavy military presence of this CFC. Right at the gate of Kiambogo, and the vehicle of the presidential candidate, now duly nominated, I saw through the vehicle, because my vehicle where I was in was the second after him. We were now supposed to be going to our office in Kamocha to launch our manifesto. So they blocked us very, very badly, tear gas, and then I saw 2 military men, one with the wheel spanner, one with a pistol, breaking the windows, the vehicle window of the principal, who was inside with his wife.
Okay. So now, for listeners in the United States, when you say the principal, they would not know who you're talking about. You're referring to Bobby Wine, of course.
Yes. Okay, so before I knew it, he was dragged out. So we also simultaneously jumped out of our vehicles. And we joined a fracas, a heavy militarized fracas. It was terrible. And then after like 30 minutes of the struggle, they managed to get the His Excellency Bobi Wine into a police, a military van, and then started driving. And as he was being pushed in, I had actually held him. I hope one time the clips will be shown. As he was being pushed in, I felt in my eyes some burning. They were being sprayed. He was being sprayed with some chemical. I do not know what it is. So they closed the door of that van, and the van started off on a very high speed. So we also entered our vehicles, and we started now following this van. And it led us to his home in Magere. Yet we were supposed to be in Kamocha launching our manifesto. Of course, at the gate, there was a heavy, heavy military presence. There was a standoff with our supporters, because we were supposed to be going to launch our manifesto. So there was a standoff the whole day up to like 2 p.m. Then there was a lot of gunfire, live bullets. In the process, actually, I got hit and my leg was bleeding so much. I was on top of a police vehicle where he was being held.
So you were hit with a shrapnel from some of the firing.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt you briefly here. So basically, your candidate, the Bobi Wine,
yes,
was hijacked, and his campaign was literally hijacked the minute he officially registered as a candidate.
Yes.
So now a listener who's not familiar with Uganda and is listening to this here in the United States would ask their question. Uganda has a general who calls himself the president. This is General Museveni. Mm. And he's in control of the army and the police. Mm. What does he fear from an unarmed candidate who at that time was 38 years old? What does he really fear? What is it?
Popularity. Because, you know, Museveni for over 30 years has been alleging that he has support, massive support of people. And he had also earlier been alleging throughout that people power, NUP, only had support in the central or in Kampala and the urban areas. But in the rural, it was his. Lo and behold, people have shown throughout the campaigns, and up to now, it has been manifested now in his anger and disappointment is now manifested in the massive abductions, militarization, beatings, and even the buying. The buying, by the way, you know, at first, I was offered 5 billion Uganda shillings, brokered by a lawyer, so that I could abandon NUP. That was in August. I declined. So when I declined, the broker, who is a lawyer, stated to me, warned me and said I would be abducted. And indeed, I was abducted. That I would be brutalized. Indeed, I was brutalized. I was arrested by military men wielding sticks, put on the back of a pickup, driven breakneck speed, and imprisoned, incarcerated in Kole police station with men. And as soon as I was put in police cell with men, a whole military barracks was brought around that police station that to prevent me from being rescued by our team. You can see this. This is intimidation of the highest order. And also during the arrest, I said, okay, I'm a judicial officer. I'm a woman. One, I'm being arrested by men. Two, I would like to know, what is my crime? This was Thursday, 11th of November. I was told by the leader that, please keep quiet. We hate you people so much. Actually, we are here to ensure that you either keep quiet, or we are telling you that we are arresting you to keep you alive for the time being, because we can't do anything with you right now. That was 11 a.m. on the 11th. Okay?
And how long were you kept in detention?
I was kept in detention until the following day at 4 p.m., which is 12th of November. And because of a lot of pressure from my networks, the lawyers like the Nicholas Opio, who later also got arrested,
yes.
Lillian FIDA, I'm a FIDA member. So
yes.
FIDA, the Association of Women Lawyers, descended in Lira. And they were there present. Other lawyers, one of them was our candidate who came all the way from Arua, Haddad Salim, and many other lawyers within Lira came and they were around the police station. They were going to the state attorney, but the charge trumped up the next day that I was deliberately spreading COVID-19. And yet I'd put on my mask. Even in my the pictures you can see from the time of arrest, I was wearing my mask. So, and then the matter is still in court. We still go back. I was held from 11 throughout the night. I was urinating in a basin in the full view of men, over 20 of them in a small room throughout the night, throughout the next day until 4 p.m.
So you were one of the fortunate ones who managed to be released, unlike many of the cases that we are now reading about, including people who endured some of the most horrific types of tortures. And I think we can discuss that a little later. I just wanted to clarify for listeners, $5 billion, that is the bribe you were offered.
$5 billion
shillings.
Air conditioned office promised, yeah.
In U.S. Terms, that would be about $1.3 million. That's how much they were willing to pay you to get you to renounce your own party.
And they joined Museveni, yes.
All right. And now talk a little bit about the violence that occurred well before the day of the vote itself.
Mm.
The November 18 massacre.
Yes.
When more than 100 Ugandans were killed.
Yes.
During protest that erupted around the country after Bobi Wine was arrested in the middle of his campaign.
Yeah, in Iluka.
The government itself admits to killing 54, as
yes.
if that is any better. Talk about that incident.
That incident happened in Iluka when in fact, we had just finished the north and eastern route, first round of the campaigns. So I had left him in Mbale and gone back to northern Uganda to give support. And so I see on that very day, the Luka arrange. I want to also actually salute the journalists who were so brave, and even our comrades who were foot soldiers who were always streaming these things live at
yes.
whatever. Yeah, I really want to salute these people.
I agree with you because
yeah.
that's how we actually were able to also see these incidents, even though the journalists were being fired at by the military
yes.
and the police.
Yes. So immediately I jumped on the bus because I knew this was going ballistic. I jumped on the bus to go to back to camp. We already knew that I could feel the pressure, the frustration. Nalufenya is a very notorious place. And they were already indications that Bobi Wine had become too much, he needs to be eliminated. I have shared some of the documents that have even been signed by the president himself that time. So people were...
Wait, documents signed by General Museveni, and what do
yes.
those documents, what do they say?
Assassinate Lina, assassinate Bobi Wine, because these are the people that must go off. Assassinate, so they were...
And you have copies of these available?
I do.
And this is the individual who is receiving weapons from the United States
uh-huh.
and getting support to the tune of $1 billion in taxpayers'
mm-hmm.
monies.
Mm-hmm.
That in the second half of this
yeah.
show. We are now taking
yeah.
Pause that thought. We're taking a short station break, and we'll be back for the second half hour of this show. This is Black Star News Show on WBI 99.5 FM radio.
Reality time.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on 99.5 New York FM Radio. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Our guest today is Lina Zedriga. She's the vice president of the National Unity Platform, the party that is the presumptive winner of the presidential election in Uganda, which is being rigged and now being hijacked by the country's dictator of 35 years, General Yoweri Museveni. And we're discussing what is going on in Uganda today. Please, let's continue the conversation, Lina Zedriga.
Yeah, thank you so much. Because also the militarization had now been hyped up, our president, you remember at one point, that is Bobi Wine, had now been given a military wear, this protective bulletproof, because the militarization was now too much. So in the process, then the anger, worldwide, I mean, the whole of Uganda, people were burning tires, the demonstrations. And of course, when I arrived in Kampala and I was supposed to proceed to Nalufenya, I got a message on my phone that they called me doctor, please do not proceed, because if you come here, it's going to be terrible. And I remember those of Nabila who had gone to visit the president were also arrested, like massively, disempowering the whole of NUP. Anyway, many people disappeared. Many of our day, we don't know where they are, but of course we are compiling the list of all this, and it gave shock waves to the whole country that actually people had and had slogan, people, power, our power, and right. They have demystified this militarization. They saw us fighting in self-defense. Yes. It was not actually a campaign. It was a war front. It was a battlefield. Okay?
And one side has the guns and the tanks, and the other side just have, you have your bare hands.
Exactly. Whether it was everywhere where we went, all the fire, pepper spray. Those were not pepper spray. Those were chemicals. We have people whose backs, from Obongi, there was a policewoman who was just directing it on my head. But somebody among the comrades, covered, and his whole head and neck were burnt. But we moved on. And also another thing was the gazetted venues for our campaigns. We would reach in every venue. The military on the ground has long shifted. We were not allowed to go through trading centers. They would direct us through the longest routes possible. Okay? It is too much. Reflecting on it, it is just too much. It wasn't.
Right, so Lina Zedriga. So in addition to the incumbent himself, the dictator Museveni, and his party, which is the National Resistance Movement, in addition to that, he also had the military, the police, and the armed forces campaigning for him. That's what essentially we are listening to.
Yes. Not only campaigning out of nothing, but I shared with you a document where Museveni deployed military to the different districts to oversee elections. He called it overseeing elections. And specifically, up north, the deployments of this massive military people was to recruit, to, first of all, it was to buy NUP, to silence NUP, to, the members. I have it, a four-pager document, and I have shared it with you, signed by Museveni himself. And on the ground deployments were exactly how that paper is. And how do we get these papers? Some of them are also disgruntled, So they share with
some of us. So you're saying people within the system are also leaking information to you?
Yes.
Now, talk a little bit about some of what the military was doing in terms of intimidating supporters of the opposition, as well as all the cases we heard in terms of preventing people from going to the polling station and in terms of actually ballot stuffing, some of which was captured on video. Discuss that, but please first talk about the physical intimidation of some of the voters and in many cases, people being killed before the election itself.
Yes, countrywide, Northern Uganda, Western Uganda, the military, having continued from the time of the campaigns to stop us, on the day of election, they were going for our polling agents. Early morning, they were going for our polling agents at the polling stations, massively. Those who survived later on in the evenings, they went for the declaration forms. I watched that very, very physically in Gulu. It happened. It happened in West Nile. It happened, you know. So the military took over many of the polling stations up north and western. Present as the electoral, not only observers, but as electoral EC, as the electoral commission itself. Then the military went for the declaration forms. They also intimidated voters. If you vote for Bobi Wine, there will be war. You know, there were some places, you know, within the voting areas. If you vote for Bobi Wine, there will be war. They were warmongering.
So that is what soldiers were telling people before they voted.
Absolutely. And even on the day before the day of election, in all the cities, major cities, you saw the militarization and the hardware of militaries being displayed. You saw. We recorded all these things. Military doing all the drills as if we, on the 10th, on the 8th, 9th, 10th, the drills in all the major cities and villages. Unprecedented.
But even then, voters still showed up in massive numbers. We saw some of the images.
Yes, large numbers, very large numbers, and voted. I quote one woman in Badege, elderly woman, by the way. I was in Gulu around 11. So as I was walking around just to try and supervise, I met this elderly lady going with a stick. See, I greeted her. Hey, Mego. How are you? Me, I'm Atima Be. I said, where are you going? Me, I'm going to vote. I was just teasing. This is an elderly one. Me, Achirka Bolkwiri, wine. Latin money, riek more. Me, wine. You see, I still have her face. And these are the people you are robbing. Terrible. But anyway, after that, they continued to cook the results in the polling stations. What happened in the tallying centers, the military presence, the hijacked, alleged use of just the screen. In fact, the electoral commissioners did not even have any role there anymore. I have evidence from many polling stations. Some of them, actually, one of them who resisted mysteriously died from Gulu. And why are they not talking about their own, whom they have also bumped off? You know, this thing has been, it is too much here. It's just too much. The militarization, the bumping off, the cooking. It's too much.
All right. And the declaration forms, these are the tallying sheets from each of the polling stations.
Yes.
Correct. And you're saying this is what was being altered by the military.
The right one was being grabbed. If they don't allow, they would be grabbed up to today, some of ours from Gulu. In fact, my colleague, the commissioner Oyeki, is missing with declaration forms from Gulu, from northern Uganda.
So
he was grabbed in Wandege.
So the polling station agents that were agents for the for NUP, the National Unity Platform, the ones who had in their possession the declaration forms were being targeted because the military wanted to eliminate them or make sure that these forms were yes. taken back by the military. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Now, yeah. now the internet was shut off on January the 12th, 2 days yes. before the election. It yeah. was not turned back on weeks later.
Yeah.
But the election commission, which is handpicked by the dictator Museveni himself, on January 16th, claimed that he had won by 59% to 35%, even though, as Al Jazeera pointed out, how could they have known, since by turning off the internet, the data could not be transmitted from the almost 35,000 polling stations. Now,
yeah.
it's interesting that the election commissioner himself was not able to answer that question, except to say, we were able to do it our way. And obviously, pointing out that your way
it's is laughable.
Manufacturing these numbers. So I found that quite interesting. But I want to get your own reaction to that alleged outcome, that General Museveni won the elections. What is your reaction to that? What is your response?
My response has always been, and I know from the deep, from my heart, Museveni failed the election miserably. Very, very miserably. Museveni knew he would fail. He knew. He knew it. So he deployed massively the militarization and assault and attempted. He pressed all the panic buttons from the word go up to today. He is still.
Yes, I mean you've described that, and I think any listener would come to that conclusion. So you're saying he did not win, and National Unity Platform won his election.
He did not win, and I say this from the bottom of my heart with evidence. One, the massive targeting of the polling agents, NUP polling agents, okay, to get the right declaration forms and grab them away, destroy, and then replace with their cooked one. Two, even when Justice Biabakam and his team, under pressure, put up the fake winning percentage, why with the percentage? Why not with the numbers? People voted as numbers. Why were they being reflected as percentages? Okay? This is a very something anybody can answer. Why not the numbers? This is the first time in our results it was being reflected in percentages, not in numbers.
Yes, because the numbers did not exist.
Yes, they have avoided the numbers. Percentage this, percentage that, percentage this. It has failed. It has actually, just pick NEBI randomly. Go on their website and pick their percentage, and then you try and do an audit of it. You don't need to be a mathematician or a statistician to know this man did not win. He did not.
Right. And when the name that you mentioned, Biabakama, that is Simon
Justice.
Biabakama.
Yes.
He's the chairman of the election commission, which is handpicked by Museveni himself.
Absolutely.
Now, so let me ask you, one of the things that Bobby Wine, your candidate, has called for is for an international forensic audit of the elections. And you're confident that this would prove that, in fact, it was your candidate who won and who should be the president of Uganda.
Beyond any reasonable doubt. Beyond any reasonable doubt. But I do not think that being the military person who he is, that is Museveni, will allow this international forensic audit team to see the light of day. I don't. But we are calling for it because we are very confident. We know, and I back that up 100%.
Okay, so listeners, if you're just tuning in, you are now listening to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI New York 99.5 FM radio. And I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Today's guest coming from Uganda is Lina Zedriga. We're speaking to her. She's in Uganda, and she's telling us about the reign of terror, which is now ongoing in Uganda by General Yoweri Museveni, who is supported with arms and $1 billion in taxpayer financing by the United States. And for listeners who did not listen to the first half hour, I suggest you look up an article in the New York Times, April 11, 2021. The headline is, "Tell Us If He's Dead, Abductions and Torture Rattle Uganda." And the article details some of the horrific experience of people that have been kidnapped and tortured. This really reminds us of what used to happen in Chile and Argentina during the military junta era in those countries. Now, listeners, you can only listen to this kind of discussion on WBAI radio. And we do this because we are not beholden to anybody. We don't take commercials. We don't take advertising. We rely on your support. So before we conclude our discussion, I want to remind you one more time. Please do pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2950. Any support will go to bringing you these types of programming. Or you can adopt Black Star News Show or any one of our other shows as a buddy, in which case the money is taken every month from your credit or debit card, and you can do so by going to give, and then the number 2, WBI.org. Now back to our guest. Alina Zadriga, we're going to be running out of time soon.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what is to be done? You say that the militaristic regime will not agree to an international forensic audit. But the regime also relies on the support of the United States, of Britain, and the European Union countries. So if you were to speak to U.S. taxpayers and to the American administration, to Joe Biden, to Vice President Kamala Harris, what would you say?
I want to thank, first of all, the global community and especially you for bringing us this opportunity to interface and giving us this platform. My take, the global community of practice, you are enjoined under your responsibility to protect. Rwanda happened, 1994. Uganda is systematically happening. I speak from experience. I speak because I am present in this. You are obliged under your responsibility to protect Ugandans, to protect our victory that is being robbed. Ugandans are very ready, by the way, to protect it themselves. But because we do not have the military hardware and we are not militaristic, we are very peaceful entity. So I'm calling upon the citizens of US to put pressure on your government that the money that you are giving in terms of military support is going around to militarize innocent civilians like Lina. It must stop immediately, that military support. Two, this struggle has the face of human beings that want peace in the region that you also have interest in. We no longer want talks. We want action. Action and immediate action as partners. That is what we are calling upon. The human rights violations must stop. Uganda prevail over Museveni and his militaristic team immediately withdraw and stop the military support and the trainings. Stop it. It is not going for anything like the Al-Shabaab. No. It's being used against innocent civilians and Ugandans. As you have said. And call for the immediate release of all those prisoners of conscience who are being charged, trumped up charges, including me. I'm still on that, but at least I'm out. The Nubian release who are being very, very innocently tried in a military court. And we also want to call upon and other international communities. It's time to audit. The military audit of Uganda needs to start immediately. Otherwise, we have degenerated as a country. That is my call to action.
And if these things don't happen, what do you fear might happen in Uganda? I mean, you have a country where the youth make up 80% of the population, and you also have reports that unemployment is almost around 80%. I mean, the discontent level seems to be reaching explosive levels.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Because when you are pushed to the wall, desperate measures need also desperate responses, okay? And these are youths that are very desperate. We are yet containing them because they believe in us. Time is running out. It's very critical that we give them hope that the peaceful means, or you are prevailing over Museveni's militarization, is going to be immediate. It's very important.
Now, these shows always don't really give us enough time. I want to also tell listeners that there is a interview that Lena Zadriga previously gave, which has gone viral on WhatsApp. It's also available on YouTube, actually. And if any listener is interested, you can go to YouTube and just look up Shaking Democracy in Uganda, and you'll see that remarkable interview that she previously gave. And she's also talking about some of the types of, you know, you even wonder how individuals can change and commit such crimes against fellow Ugandans. You talk about, for example, some of the torture where women who have been detained have men insert their hands into their vaginas to extract information from them.
Yes, to dehumanize them.
In the party.
Yeah.
And you talk about women, people being sodomized or being tied with stones and dropped in rivers.
River Nile, yes.
And so I just say this to let U.S. taxpayers know what is being done by this regime, which is supported by the U.S. administration. Now, before we get off, I want to ask you this question.
Mm.
The vision that you have for Uganda, the vision of a peaceful Uganda,
yes.
How might that Uganda look to you, and how can it come about?
Thank you very much. Uganda deteriorated like this deliberately. It was constructively done by humans. It will also take us to reconstruct this Uganda where you and I grew in the 1960s, where peace and security was real in practice. Okay? So, we will deliberately construct a peaceful, inclusive, human rights respecting entities. We will build strong institutions. Because right now, everywhere the militarization, the assassinated leader is signed by one human being, one person.
General Museveni.
Yes. So we need those strong institutions to work for Uganda. We need to construct it. We have to be transformational, taking decisions and holding such conversations through our hearts, not transactional as it is happening right now. So transactional, black, or is it khaki envelopes, you know, you are going to host me, so how much are you paying? But we must not tolerate that. We need to be transformational. Humanity, Ubuntu, Dano, Bada at the center of all this. And we can achieve it because Nelson Mandela did it. We have done it before. We know when we constructively, deliberately take these actions and also put repercussions if you fail to do. People are longing for that kind of a community. People, my grandchildren, when I tell them, you know, I grew in a community, A, B, C, D, why can't you take us back? You see? So those are some of the things that inspire me, that we cannot, we allowed it to degenerate because we kept it quiet. We allowed ourselves to be bought. Now we refuse to be bought. We refuse to be at the periphery. In politics, for a long time, you and I, Milton, have been like the menu. Now we need to be at the table to discuss the menu. We have been.
Now, on that note, we actually have run out of time. I would like you to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you if they want to continue this conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Milton, for a wonderful short time. For purposes of consistency, you have my number, I think. I would like to allow that you get that to
the screen. You can tell them your email address. You can just tell them the email address.
Okay. My email address is Lina, L-I-N-A, .zedriga@gmail.com.
And Zedriga is spelled Z-E-D-R-I-G-A.
Yes, Lina.Zedriga, yes, at gmail.com.
Are you on Facebook as well?
Yes, I'm on Facebook, Lina Zed too.
Very good. Are you on Twitter?
Yes, yes, I think, but not so much. My Twitter is redundant.
All right, listeners, also look her up, as I said, on YouTube. Look up that remarkable other interview that she provided. Thank you so much, and we definitely will have you back in a couple of weeks to give us
I'll
an update.
Honored.
Stay strong and stay safe, please.
Thank you.
Asante, also. Asante is the Israeli word for thank you. Listeners, that's all the time we have. You can also go to blackstarnews.com and follow me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. Stay strong, stay Pan-African. See you next week.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Ebring with some brief news headlines. U.S. federal health agencies are recommending pausing the use of Johnson & Johnson's single-dose COVID-19 vaccine after six recipients developed a rare disorder involving blood clots. The FDA and the CDC will stop using the vaccine at federal sites and are urging states to do so as well while they examine the safety issues. All six recipients were women between the ages of 18 and 48. One woman died, and a second woman in Nebraska has been hospitalized in critical condition. The agency said in a statement today that the CDC will convene a meeting of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices on Wednesday to review the cases. Here are some of Dr. Anthony Fauci's comments on the safety issues involved with the Johnson & Johnson single-dose vaccine.
This is a really rare event. If you look at what we know so far, there have been six out of the 6.85 million doses, which is less than one in a million. So remember, this is something that we always, out of an abundance of caution, as Jeff said, to give us a time to take a good look at it and see if we can get further information. So I'll stop there.
As of Monday, over 6.8 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson single-dose vaccine have been administered across the country.